Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. John Ledyard and Trevor Sycamore with you guys from thedraftnetwork.com, talking about an unbelievably entertaining and take-filled first weekend of college football. Trevor, Florida might be back. Are you ready to declare that?
100%
victory over Charleston. 100%.
Yes. No. It is firmly safe to say that Florida is 100% back. No, I'm
Felipe Franks, Heisman.
No, 100%. Front runner, even.
Very on the table.
No, I actually tweeted during the game, and by the game, I mean the last game here that we watched this weekend, which was Florida State and Virginia Tech. I tweeted, and I know that you've got some takes on how good Florida State is or lack thereof, but how did, John, I need you to, how did the state of Florida, being such a hotbed for football talent, right? Am I right?
You are very much correct.
How does Florida State, and Miami have three of the worst offensive lines in the country?
That's a great question. And it's been that way for a while. Hasn't it been that way for a while?
Yes,
I mean, Florida State's been terrible forever. Miami's been bad last couple years. It's bad. And honestly, I think it's development of talent. If you look at Notre Dame doesn't always produce the best prospects, but they are the best coaches of the offensive line. And Wisconsin, great coaching on the offensive line. And Iowa, great coaching in the offensive line. And Stanford, great coach. So to me, those are real. You know, even when you do, those guys aren't great NFL players and don't go on to be great NFL players. And there's so many names that come to mind from all of those schools, the kind of guys who were great in college, who won awards in college, and then went on to the NFL and were just, you know, just guys. I mean, they were just too limited. They couldn't do it. But technically, they were great players in college football. They were smart. They were technical. They knew how to use their hands. And that just isn't the case. You got tons of great athletes in Miami and Florida and Florida State, but the coaching and the offensive line, really hurting, man. There's just not a lot of good stuff going on there.
And I've brought this up before, man. We're in very much in an age where you're hiring these assistant coaches, these position coaches, and they're basically just recruiters. You know, like, they're just there to get kids in the building and to get them to sign their letter of intent. And then once they get them on campus, they don't know what to do with them. They don't know how to make them better. I tell people this all the time. I did not see a single player improve under Jim McElwain at Florida. Right. Yeah. But it's not just at Florida. I see it all over the country. These schools see that they're losing the recruiting battle so bad to these other schools that are either close to them or in their conference or whatever it is. And they try to out-recruit them, and man, do they give up coaching for it. And I think that it's coming back to bite a lot of them. And we're seeing that. I mean, Willie Taggart, it is one game in, so let's not overblow too much stuff. But, I mean, Florida State's got some talent. They had some hype going into the year, you know, and that offense, not even just the offensive line, that offense looked awful.
I mean, it was
Tech.
There were many embarrassing performances by quote unquote contender teams. We talked about that at length yesterday and how they were probably more pretenders in the cases of Michigan and Miami and perhaps even Penn State than anything else. But Florida State might have taken the cake, man. I mean, that was disgusting. I mean, 3 points on a Virginia Tech defense that was starting, like, what do they have, 8, 7 new starters or something on that defense? I mean, that's incredible. Incredible. I mean, they had no idea what they were doing. They were poorly prepared defensively to start the game. They did find their way defensively in the second half, so give them some credit for that. But Virginia Tech left the door open repeatedly, and offensively they could not execute. They turned the ball over at will. The play designs were terrible and super predictable, and you could see Virginia Tech just teeing off. They knew exactly what was coming. Taggart's offense was not adjusted whatsoever. He continues to stand out to me as one of the most overrated head coaches. Now, I want to leave the door open for him to be good at Florida State because he deserves that kind of change. He just, you know, he's not been anywhere super long since South Florida. And so, yeah, I want to leave that door open. But
Quentin Flowers made him at South Florida, man.
I mean, there were so
many things that USF did that were similar, obviously, to kind of what we saw tonight with Florida State, except the difference was DeAndre Francois is not Quentin Flowers in terms of like a college player. Right. Like Quentin Flowers is unbelievable with his legs. He was one of the most electrifying players right. in college football. We wouldn't have been talking about the most electrifying player in college football had Lamar Jackson not existed. Right. And so anytime you've got that guy, sure, you can run an offense like Willie Taggart's and it can be simple because even when you run an RPO like that, and somebody was pointing out in the game today too, actually a couple of people were, and you could notice it a little bit, when Florida State would run RPOs, which massive part of what Willie Taggart does. It was a huge mm-hmm. part of what he did at USF. And it was a huge part of what he did at Oregon that was like, okay, well, he might be a success at Oregon because it's the same kind of offense. They do a lot of RPO stuff. They have running quarterbacks. And Francois can move, but...
Not like that, though.
Like, you've got to understand the concept of it, too. He's coming off patellar surgery. Like, that's mm-hmm. his first game back from patellar. Like, you can't... Somebody was pointing out in the game, back to my main point, when they would run RPOs, Francois would rarely pull and keep. And I mean, if I had just torn my patellar tendon and that was my first game back, I wouldn't want to pull and keep either, you know?
Right.
So I don't know how well that's gonna work for Francois. And we can start because obviously, you know, we're a draft podcast, not necessarily a college football podcast. And so we'll talk about some of the individual prospect performances. We can start with Francois there.
You're going to cape for your boy, and I get it. I mean, there's plenty sure. of excuses. Like, that the team was bad. Like, the team was bad. The coaching was bad. The line was bad.
I thought the offensive line was awful. I thought that the obviously the offensive execution was awful. But, like, let's not forget, Francois' stat line ends with zero touchdowns. He should have had two. Like, he hit Gavin in the hands, and then whether you want to call the one where Nooney was down or not, you can call it whatever you want, but it was – they should have reviewed that, and it probably would have got overturned. So,
was that a pass? I can't even remember.
It was a pass. It was a little screen or a slant pass, whatever it was. And so, like, and then, you know, the one interception that he had, don't get me wrong, I'm not, like, trying to make too many excuses for the dude.
Which interception?
The one that he had in the first half, okay. Where it was like, you knew that interception was, there was no momentum in the building, and you could clearly see that he was trying to fire his guys up the whole time. And that throw was like, all right, I got to do this. Like, I have to do this on my own. I got to throw this ball. He shouldn't have thrown that ball. And, like, that's part of the maturing process for him. I mean,
Same thing late in the game, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so, like, there's a ton of stuff that Francois needs to work on. No question about it. But, man, I was just really discouraged long term because I always thought that there was stuff that Francois had to work on. But I don't know how much better he's going to get at it this year, watching that offensive line and watching the way Willie Taggart called plays. Yeah. And that's what's the biggest bummer to me about Francois in that first game. It really is. Because, I even saw you tweeting. I saw you tweeting about some of the throws in the first quarter.
He started off on fire. And then as the game unraveled, he unraveled. You know, as he started seeing pressure when there wasn't any, and then there was some so much of the time, it was hard to blame him. But, mm-hmm. you know, he doesn't manage the pocket really well in his movements. He's not super efficient, you know, in terms of that stuff. So, you know, I think that there are so many things he needs to work on, but you're right, they're not being aided by where he is, for sure.
I just don't, yeah. It's hard to see me getting him. I hope I'm wrong, but it's hard to see me in that environment, him get that much better.
Right.
What about defensive side of the ball? We got two guys to talk about. We got Taylor and Burns.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get to that, though, do want to remind people it is crunch time for fantasy football, and Locked On Network is delivering. Locked On has a brand new fantasy football show, Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7. This stuff is great, guys. Fantasy Football 24/7 will give you the latest trends, hot roster moves, and where to get the advantage. Plus, Ethan Turner, the injury expert, gives you the edge. Lots of great stuff. Please check it out. Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7 is here to help you win your league. Those guys provide expert analysis. It's truly going to be one of those game-changing fantasy football shows. So go check it out when you get a chance. Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7.
Hey, and speaking of that, I mean, we've been doing this for a while now, and there have been a ton of people that have come up to us since we started this podcast, and they've been asked us for all kinds of advice. I mean, stuff, you know, in fantasy football, betting, whatever it is. Usually it's kind of what teams to bet on. We've had that over the years. Mm-hmm. Truth is, we don't necessarily know who's going to win, but if you do, you, the listener, if you do, if you think you know better than us, you got to head over to MyBookie. I mean, remember, you got to remember that where you bet is almost as important as like who you're betting on. So that's why we've always told people, we were with them last year. MyBookie is the place to go. They are your best bet this season. You can lay down cash, win big today. This season, it's going on all season long. And so, I mean, we had a segment that we totally devoted to them last year. So we would only recommend it, obviously, if it's been a service that's been good to us. So MyBookie, you can use the promo code, which is locked on when you sign up. So visit MyBookie today. That's MyBookie. Don't forget to use the promo code locked on when you create your account to claim the bonus. There you go.
So Trevon Hill and Brian Burns sold the show. We wanted the quarterbacks to be great.
Yeah,
we wanted the offense to be great, and there were moments, but those guys sold the show. I thought both of them were excellent. Burns, I've talked about at length, and you know, speed bend obviously being his go-to. He won with an inside spin move that just showed great attention to detail, kept his hands working, swatted the tackle's hands down, spun inside, had set him up with speed all night. Perfect move in the perfect time and a huge play for Florida State that pushed Virginia Tech completely out of field goal range. And then Trevon Hill was just all night, man. I mean, it was constant. It was his speed to bend is really impressive. Now, he gets tied up way more than Burns. Like, he's way more one-dimensional, I noticed. But it's still a pretty nice dimension to have. Like I told you, like I've always said this to you, like, if you could do one thing well as a pass rusher, make it be winning the edge. That should be your one thing well. And if you can do that well, everything else can be built from there. If you can't, I think you have limitations as a player. So the fact that you can do that,
I'm excited. It's tough to teach that. You know, you said, like, if you can do one thing well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why, right? Because it takes typically great pass rush athleticism to consistently be a good cornering pass rusher off the edge. Good burst, good speed up the arc, and good bend flexibility at the top of the arc, whether you're in your ankles or your hips. So you're basically, those are the kind of, and like you said, those are the difficult things to teach. So when you have that, it opens up a ton more options for you as a pass rusher. I think both of these guys have that. Hill now, made some crazy turns last night.
Yeah. And you know, I just want to say this too, with all the scouting that we've done over the summer, it's been great because I've been able to go into almost every single game that I've watched and I knew of a handful of prospects to look out for. And no matter what game was on Saturday, obviously Monday and Sunday as well, I had guys to look out for. And I liked that. But at the same time, in the back of my head, I was like, man, I'm going to get like stale of all these dudes that we've been watching for months. And now we go into the season. And you know what? I saw Trevon Hill on Monday night. And that was the first time I had ever heard his name. And he put on a show. And so that was a really cool thing for me to have that moment where it's like, hey, I'm still going to discover all kinds of new awesome prospects as the season go on because he's a redshirt junior. That dude's draft eligible.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I had ever even heard his name. And he was awesome. He was awesome to watch.
Yeah, and it wasn't just those guys. I mean, Ricky Walker did some good things on the inside for Virginia Tech. Rakeem Christmas made a huge stop for Florida State. Down near the goal line was critical. I mean, I think both those guys have – they're really interesting because in their flashes, I thought their flashes last year were better than anything Dexter Lawrence put out on tape, to be honest. The problem was that they're a little bit inconsistent. Like Walker, there was some great plays that he made, and then there was a play – I just watched him in the replay just completely washed down the line of scrimmage. You know, he just plays a little bit high, and he can get stuck on blocks as a result. You know, the lower you play – the more leverage, the less body space you give up, the less you know, less surface area you kind of give up to the blocker to blocker. So you're able to keep yourself a little cleaner and make a few more plays as a result. And I just thought that when I watched Ricky Walker, that was still an issue for him. But his flashes are—I mean, he is explosive and he can get through gaps. And yeah, so when he's attacking those gaps, I really like him, and I hope that a team uses him in that fashion in the NFL. And Virginia Tech does use him in that way a little bit too. And with Christmas, it's, you know, we talked about before on the podcast, I think, some of his battles with Lester Cotton last year and that Florida State Alabama game, the one Francois actually got hurt in 2 years ago. I mean, he was really battling in that game. And you could see some of his strengths as well as some of his weaknesses. And I just think that there's some things with him as a player that really get me excited. And he looked like he was in even better shape from what I saw in this game. So both of these teams had some guys. In Virginia Tech, all the talk about them replacing all the starters on defense, but you know, they really looked like they had some nice pieces in place and some guys to really build around. And I know Florida State played terrible, and that definitely is the bigger takeaway to me from this game. No disrespect to Virginia Tech, But I think they really look like they're building in the right direction on that side of the ball, at least. Now they just need that offense to execute a little more consistently.
Fuente's a fun coach, I think.
He is. He's a really good – yeah, he's a very fun coach.
So that was good. Did we talk about Taylor?
Did we talk about Taylor? No, we didn't. Yes. Before we move on, yes, we got to talk about Lavonte Taylor. What a mess.
Not good.
Yeah.
Not
it's a
good.
Rough performance, and it exposed kind of everything we're concerned about, right? I mean,
yeah,
it showed the 6'2" receiver bossing him in the end zone, and yeah. Then it showed like the close up. I was like, I don't even know if he's at this guy's shoulder. Like, he might be 5'8", dude.
Bro, Lavonte is a good corner. I think he's a good corner. I think he can play in the NFL. I just think he's a nickel, you know? So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I hear you, and I'm not saying he isn't a nickel. He's certainly going to go to nickel in the NFL. I think tonight was – see, the thing about last year was that there were a few times where he got beat at the catch point, but he honestly wasn't really tested enough because, honestly, people were throwing at McFadden so much.
Jackson was just throwing, like, air balls.
Oh, yeah, but tonight just exposed him more so than I thought any of the tape that I've seen from him from last year. He struggled to find the ball. He struggled to find it down the field. He struggled to find it in the end zone in that play. He struggles to find the ball and then get up and contest. It's just not like it's not a very natural thing for him. It's not really instinctive for him to go up and get the ball at the catch point. Now, in a zone heavy, you know, when he was playing zone or off man and stuff like that at Florida State last year, that's when he made some of his best plays on the ball. But in the air, that's not really where he thrives, and that is going to be an issue. I mean, it's an issue for corners if they're 5'10", 5'11". He's not going to be 5'10", or 5'11". So it's going to be a big issue for him at the height that he's at, because he's already given up that much more. So and I don't know what kind of hops he has either. He was not getting up and contesting. You know, he was not getting up and challenging receivers in the air. And like you said, a nickel, yes, but we also have to think about, like, okay, we want to put him in the nickel because of his size, and I think it's fair. The NFL is going to put him in the nickel, you know, because of his size and because of the fact that his issues are clear from what he does on the outside. Like, that's going to translate to the NFL and continue to be an issue, but I don't think it necessarily means, like, okay, we just put him in nickel and then he's perfect. There's still concerns to me. Like,
No. He's still small.
Right. He's still small.
Like,
and
the Falcons still put Julio in the slot. Yeah. You know, the Bucs still put Mike Evans in the slot. Right. The Bengals still could put AJ Green in the slot.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, plays in the slot all the time. And I know he's
you can do whatever you want. So
it's very tricky to figure out how best to use Lavonte Taylor, because not only that, you typically want, and this part will be good, he's going to be a good communicator on the field from everything I know about him. He's a good communicator on the field, and he's super smart, and you want that in your nickel corner because they have to communicate a lot of things, but they also have to be a really willing run defender.
Yeah.
And I think that is somewhat there with Taylor for sure. Like, there's definitely, I mean, I think he's pretty good in that regard, but also, like, he could not get off blocks tonight on the perimeter. And I know they were man coverage a lot, so he's turning and running and then trying to get on a block and then I'm trying to find the ball and then get clean off a block. So it's tough. I'm not going to lie and say that it isn't tough, but that's going to be an issue with him playing in the nickel, I think, is that he's just really small. It's going to be hard for him to get backs down one-on-one, and I think teams are going to try and find ways to move receivers around and get mismatches against him. And so at some point, that size and the inability to play bigger than your listed size, I think that's really the key, because we've seen small corners, but they played bigger. And so that combination of things definitely hurts him a little bit. So not a great performance by him against Virginia Tech, in my opinion. I know we kind of were talking about that in Slack, and this could be a game that really hurts his stock, and I think it will. Hey, the Locked On Network is expanding with college shows. Coming this week, Locked On Wolverines, Locked On Buckeyes, Locked On Seminoles, lots to talk about for the Wolverines and the Seminoles this week, at least. Plus, we are already locked on to the Ducks, Nittany Lions, the Bears, the Crimson Tide, the Wildcats, the Razorbacks, the Volunteers, and the Cougars. Find your favorite college show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. Really excited about that step for the Locked On Network moving into the college realm. Trevor, before we wrap up this show, thoughts on Sam Darnold being named the starting quarterback for the New York Jets?
I like it. I like it.
So do I.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was clearly more poised than you thought he was going to be in the preseason. And I understand that regular season games are much different than preseason games. But look, if you traded Bridgewater, this is the guy, you know? Right. I mean,
not surprising at all. Yeah, yeah.
Because there's things like time is not the same for every guy, right? Like time sitting on the bench could mean more for some person. Like if you can't handle pressure well, like if you can't recognize certain coverages well, if you can't pick up certain formations in the pre-snap well, if pressure starts to get to you, all of those things, yeah, maybe you could sit on the bench, learn a little bit from it, get some more film under your belt, take a look at that, get more live reps, try to do that kinds of stuff, like in practice, I mean, at least. Mm-hmm. And that could help you in that regard. But we watched Sam Darnold in the preseason handle pressure pretty well, recognize things, be able to see reads before they got open, recognize some certain things in the pre-snap. And man, if you see progression in all those, the only thing that's standing in your way from obtaining your potential is then playing time. So you're not getting anything by just having him sit. Once you get to the point where the only thing that's going to make you better in live reps, and I mean that meaning that positives will come from it because sometimes negatives can come from it, right? It's overwhelming if those things that I mentioned aren't already there. Then it makes sense. Just play the guy. Like he's going to take his lumps, sure, but this is the move, I think. This is the move.
Right. And that's exactly what it is. It's time for the New York Jets. They've dealt with journeymen and that avenue, older quarterbacks from Fitzpatrick to McCown, and tried to go down that route and failed with Hackenberg. And this organization needs to turn over a new leaf.
How?
And mentally,
does Hackenberg keep getting work, John?
He's on the Bengals practice squad now. So
how?
I honestly, it's because of the tool. It's the tools.
I need answers.
Everybody wants to just
Okay, see but what's if, there. If you're a hammer and you got to screw something out, you still got tools.
I mean, I
can't do anything with it.
I think he's the worst quarterback in the NFL right now.
No question.
And there's about 15 dudes that deserve 15 quarterbacks not in the league that deserve a practice squad spot.
No question about it.
He has no confidence. He's not smart. Everything's a wreck on the field. He's a turnover machine. Yeah. I mean, I know I don't want to make too big a deal out of it because he's on a practice squad, but at the same time, the principle of your point is right.
Because roster spots in the NFL, like 53-man or practice squad, whatever you want to call it, are valuable.
Right.
They're extremely valuable. Head coaches, we hear all the time, oh, you know, I barely got any sleep the last week of the preseason because I was thinking about all the cuts we would have to make and which guy we want to bring back on the practice squad and who we want to release at what time so they don't get claimed and blah, blah, blah. And you're over here telling me that multiple head coaches and GMs have wasted spots on Christian Hackenberg after literally like 1 year in the league when we all knew he was going to be butt?
It doesn't make any sense.
He's lying to us. Man, I almost wrote an article this week about how GMs and coaches, it was actually in kind of a reaction to, you know, when you were going through your thing on Twitter about like guys taking L's, you know, like, oh, this guy got released, I was big on him mm-hmm. going into the draft, and so that's kind of an L I've got to take. And I mean, you're definitely right, you know, when you get cut from a team, it's never a good sign, but there are certain cases, of course, you know, John Gruden, what he did with Khalil Mack being one of them, that you know, we hold the NFL and their decision making to this high standard, obviously, because that is ultimately what we want. They control how things unfold.
Right.
But just because they control how things unfold doesn't always mean that they're right.
Right.
And so, like, these are kind of these examples of, like, which I guess makes our job fun, right? I mean, we always get to have almost like an out or something to talk about or blah, blah, blah. But
that's the thing. Like, we won't ever totally know. Like, in our spots, like, we won't ever totally know, like, you know, it's mind-boggling to me. I don't know what I did wrong with Quentin Meek's evaluation. I only had him in the third round. I didn't think, like if he were around the league for a couple of years and got beat, like, I could see, like, okay, then he's out of the league. That wouldn't shock me or anything like that. But, like, the fact that it's hard for him even to get work at this point, I know he got picked up by somebody, so he's still around. But the fact that it's, you know, there's 2016 spots on NFL route. When you count the 10 guys on the practice squad and the 53 mm-hmm. on the roster, I mean, that's it. I mean, that sounds like a lot of names, but compared to the guys that, you know, come out, compared to 90 that start, you know, it's on the roster. So, I mean, it's a very selective group. And the fact that, like, his athletic testing and his background and him being coach's son and loving the game and being high character. And I mean, I've talked to the kid, like, he's a great kid, you know, and the size and the speed and the athleticism. And I'm just like, kind of like, man, what is the deal here? Like, why is it hard?
Right? Like, what did we miss?
Right. But it, you know, at the same time, like, I can, you know, use that as an excuse. Like, the NFL is just messing up with this guy. But like 99% of the time, you know, it is probably, I mean, and that's more so for guys that's more so for guys that they don't like that end up coming out of the league. I will say there's guys that the NFL likes and gives multiple chances to that the NFL is just wrong on. But if a dude can't play, there, I would say the vast majority of the time, he gets a shot until it's clear that he can't play at that level.
That's how I would
quantify it. So in Hackenberg's case, yeah, they're taking that L and they're continuing to take it, and it is bad. I'm glad you brought it up because it is stupid. Because this dude could not get on the field for the New York freaking Jets. He couldn't get on the field. They spent a second round pick on him. They wouldn't even put him out there with nothing on the line. They would rather try it out Bryce Petty, who they knew wasn't going
to
be anything.
Who didn't know how to identify coverages when he got to the NFL.
Right.
The dude literally asked Madden on defense when he played Madden.
How do you know this?
Because this was a story. This is a quote that he had. He said, like,
I remember this.
I swear to God, going into his second year, somebody asked him, like, in the preseason, I think it must have been last year, right, or something.
This is your boy, NFL.
They said, hey, Bryce Petty, what's the biggest difference between year two and year one? And he said, well, now I understand coverages a lot better. I've been in my film room. I know, like, the difference between a cover three and, like, quarters and, like, what man coverage and zone coverage looks like. And then he said, yeah, now I don't have to ask Madden all the time when I play defensive Madden. Ha, 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 funny joke. You draft this guy's on your team.
And he's over Christian Hackenberg, who you took with the second round. It's unfathomable. And it's unfathomable they didn't give him a shot to even play because there was literally nothing to lose. And why would you not want to know if your investment is this gamer, you know, who just never showed up in practice? But it also speaks to the level of which you had to just be so scared he was going to embarrass your organization to not even put him on the field. And now he's, you know, what, been on three different teams since then?
You know what's weird, too, about Christian Hackenberg? He wasn't even good in college.
He wasn't.
He had one good season his freshman year.
It wasn't even that great.
And it wasn't even that great.
It's bad, dude. It's
be big, you know, if you have a big, tall, white son and you don't at least try to make him a quarterback, you're doing it wrong.
Davis Webb.
You're doing him wrong.
Look at Davis Webb. Third round pick. Currently gone. No one signed him, right? He's out of the league right now. I'm sure somebody will eventually pick him up.
I don't have a Davis Webb tracker. I'm sorry.
Well, you should. He'll get 15 chances. Bucks will probably sign him. Watch. After they cut Jameis.
Wow.
We'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Don't worry. We didn't use up all our good stuff today. We still got more in the tank for you tomorrow. And then we'll have the pod Thursday. We'll fan Friday. Lots lined up for the Locked On NFL Draft podcast. This week, college football returns in just a couple days. That's kind of nice, having a game on a Monday night.
First week of NFL football. Excited for it?
Yeah, we're 2 days away from first NFL game, Eagles and Falcons. Nick Foles is starting at quarterback. Doug Peterson finally let us know.
Yeah, finally. And he didn't want to answer any other questions that day.
And he was very salty. Old Doug. Don't usually see him like that. I hate seeing him like that. I like him when he's chipper.
Super Bowl hangover, man. That's what it is. Pressure's mounting on him. He's got a repeat.
It feels that way, doesn't it? But that should be a fun game. That should be a good barometer for measuring the NFC. We'll have thoughts on that as well and offer up some of our predictions for week one. We'll do a little bit of that as well. So excited for that. As always, keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.